Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, think we have anything to talk about this week?
It was a pretty mundane weekend, pretty boring. I don't know that there's all that much to say, really. I think this is going to be hard to get through an hour show, Jim.
No real headlines.
None that I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, we here at Penn State have had a changeover at the top, Dustin. It's I was looking for real quick the announcement. Okay, here's how it goes. Penn State announces change in football leadership. That's the headline of what they put out.
Yep, that's become pretty standard process among college football. That's the very polite, politically correct, nice way of saying things. And there's probably also a comment in there of, we appreciate everything James Franklin has done for Penn State.
Penn State owes an enormous amount of gratitude to Coach Franklin, who rebuilt our football program into a national power. And to thank him for his efforts, we're showing him the door.
But with a hefty $49 million going away gift. So it can't be that bad, Jim. If I could go back in time, I would want to be a failed football coach as my next profession.
Do you know what is one of the funniest things is every one of those coaches who gets let go, when they first talk, you'd think somebody died in their family. You know, it's the... Except for one guy. Do you remember Ed Orgeron when he was let go at LSU? Hey, I don't know what his parting gift was, like $20 million or something to that effect.
Yeah, it was. I think it was in that neighborhood. Yeah.
And the next thing you know, you see pictures of him with his shirt off on the beach having a grand old time. So I always thought that's the right way to handle it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he said in his exit interview, he's like, how soon you want me gone and which door you want me to leave from? I'll take that money and run. He won a national championship, so he had nothing left to prove.
No, I get that. Now, the thing is, though, we make light of some of this. And, you know, James Franklin has a $50 million parting gift. I'm not going to feel bad for him, Dustin. But there's a lot of other people who are involved in the program who don't have a $50 million golden parachute. Those are the people that I feel bad for.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other people that are. And I mean, it's a big shot to your ego, obviously, to be let go. But you've got staffers, graduate assistants, coordinators, coaches, players, families. There's a lot of people that this kind of trickles down to. And they're probably going to be okay for the remainder of the season. But then it becomes a guessing game as to what happens in the aftermath of a coaching change. Some of them may be okay. There could be a rush to the transfer portal. We don't really know what's going to happen in these next couple weeks. And this is why I don't know what your stance is on this. I've never really quite understood the benefit of relieving a head coach midway through the season. But maybe you could provide some insight as to why it's a good or bad thing. I don't know that it's very advantageous, especially in this type of situation.
I think, Dustin, in a lot of cases, it's let's get a head start on looking around for the next coach.
My argument to that is, does it really, if the guy is in place, does it really prevent you from looking?
I do think so. Here's how I think it's at least it's kind of bad form to do it. You know, if James Franklin is still the coach and Pat Kraft places a call to Matt Rhule, hey, Matt, how's it going, buddy? Good. You know, we're 5-1 here at Nebraska, so it's going well. How about you, Pat? What's going on with you? Well, you know, between you and I, James, he's done at the end of this season. He's toast. So, and I think for a lot of cases, it's get that head start. But I think in this situation, Dustin, and I want to get your thoughts on this from the outside looking in. But from being here, you don't typically want mob rule. You don't want the fans to decide who your head coach is. However, the fever pitch here in Nittany Nation has gotten to the point where James Franklin could not go on as the head coach. It just, it had reached that point. And what's amazing is how quickly it all happened. But it feels like he could not, after the Northwestern loss, there was just, I don't know if it's fair to say he lost his team or not. It's hard to say that without being in the locker room. But it reached a point where I don't think Pat Kraft and the powers to be had any choice but to let him go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it was probably coming at the end of the season, in one way, shape, or another. Like it was the writing was on the wall. You can't prop this team up as the, which is what's crazy to me. And I actually don't know long term. I think we've talked about this, Jim. Be careful what you wish for, because this, I mean, it could get ugly. We've seen this multiple times where you make one wrong hire and all of a sudden you're back 10 years and you're just trying to get back to what James Franklin had established. To me, a change was definitely going to happen because you can't build this team up to be the best it's ever been, the best coaching staff you've ever had. Here's my thought on this, and I don't know. I'm not in the locker, as you mentioned. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know if he lost the locker room. I don't know. To me, this is also maybe a little bit of the problem when you pay players, and I know that part is not going anywhere. After they lost to UCLA specifically, is there a level of okay? Well, we're not going to the playoff. I don't really care. I think that like you're getting your money, and we've amped up. No longer are bowl games important. It's only about the 12 teams that make the playoff. And Penn State was not going to get in, I don't think, under any circumstance with that loss. So is there a level of I'm just going to kind of mail it in a little bit. Like you watched that game on Saturday and they were not playing hard. I'm like, I don't very often say that because I'm not in the mind or the body of a 20-year-old student athlete. They didn't have the same fire. They didn't have the same energy. I don't think they played hard in that game against Northwestern. I legitimately don't.
And, you know, what's crazy to me, you pointed out that after UCLA, they weren't going to make the playoffs no matter what. My argument to that is if they were a 10-2 team that beat Iowa on the road, beat Ohio State in Columbus, and beat Indiana, a top 10 undefeated Indiana team at home, that's a playoff team. Maybe. Even with the loss to UCLA. So I felt like there was still something that James Franklin could sell to his team. Now, from the outside, you might say, hey, that team we saw play against UCLA, that team is not capable of making the playoffs. But did we not have that same discussion about Notre Dame a year ago against Northern Illinois?
We did. I believe that one loss was probably different than the two losses. And I think when you look at some of the, like in Alabama, for example, I think that there is some more leeway. I think it would keep coming back. Now look, UCLA may end up being the best team in the Big Ten. I mean, they're on a roll right now, Jim. I say that facetiously, but I mean, there would have been a path. I don't see how they would have won either one or both of those games given the circumstance. So I shouldn't say they weren't going to make the playoff. I think logical minds are like, well, if we can't beat UCLA, we can't beat Oregon. We're certainly not beating Penn State or Ohio State. So we're pretty much done here. I mean, maybe it is the fact that they lost the locker room but we did the Big Ten and 60 because I was out and about and covering other things over the weekend. I even felt like in the UCLA game, it was they just got kind of out-schemed a little bit. I'd never felt like Penn State wasn't playing hard. I watched that game against Northwestern, and it was like that wasn't a recognizable team from what we've seen from Penn State in the past.
It wasn't, and that's why I said first of all, the speed at which this all took place, okay? Mm-hmm. This was a team coming off the college football playoff semifinals a year ago with what most people thought was James Franklin's most talented team. And I think the bringing in Jim Knowles, highest paid coordinator in college football, Penn State won a bidding war to bring him in. That's incredible. Penn State doesn't do that, okay? Penn State's, you don't expect them to win that kind of bidding war. And 2.5 weeks ago, you know, Dustin, we're at Beaver Stadium, 110,000 people, and replay shows a fumble goes away, gets overruled because a player's knee hit not the ground, but the grass.
Yeah,
okay. Right. And I'm of the feeling, had that call or in overtime when Oregon, you go double overtime against someone, you know the game's a toss-up game. I'll put it in the form of a question. If Penn State had pulled out the game against Oregon, do you think there's any way they lose to UCLA and or Northwestern?
I don't think so, no.
I don't either. So that's the margin we're talking about from James Franklin being 6-0 and probably ranked number 2 right now, and James Franklin out the door.
Right.
That's how how close that margin of error is, and it boggles my mind that it could work that way, work that fast. And you know, when we come back after the break, Dustin, what I want you to do is hopefully be someone who could see the forest for the trees here for us. Help those of us here at Penn State to figure this out, how this occurs. And, you know, I have some of my theories about, James Franklin's relationship with the fans prior to all this. But it's amazing to me the fall from grace happened so quickly. And have you ever seen anything like this before? Is there anywhere in the country you could talk about someone who was number 2 in the country and 2 weeks later they're out looking for a job? When we come back, Dustin, I'm going to let you answer that question.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number 2 of our show. And Dustin is going to help us out here to understand how all this happened. Take a look at the forest for us, Dustin.
Well, I don't know. There's going to be a lot of people that have theories about how this went down, and I wish I could provide some insight. What I wonder, Jim, is, look, coaches can have bad seasons. It was certainly disappointing to start 3-3, and obviously you lose to teams that were considered to be two of the worst in the Big Ten, and Northwestern is actually 4-2. So I mean, that's I think they're even better than I thought they were going to be. UCLA seems to have found a spark with their coaching change, but when you're expected to be a playoff team, and again, you make the big investments and everything, I think that there is a level of expectation that you deliver on those. At least you win the games you're supposed to. And even if they did that, I think you would get to 10-2 and probably into the playoff, but they weren't able to do that. Part of me wonders too, Jim, and maybe you'll know this better than I. It seemed like every time there was a major coaching vacancy, James Franklin's name would surface and Penn State would then re-up their contract. And I wonder if boosters and people that were kind of footing the bill for that were getting a little tired of James Franklin doing that. And I know that wasn't him directly, but it's also his agent. Like, that's his agent's job, is to get him more money. And it's like, yeah, we're not going to play this game anymore. You've been given ample opportunity to prove you belong, and we've given you everything you want, and this is the result. And it sounds crazy because this was just a team that 10 months ago was in the Big Ten championship game playing Oregon and reaching the semifinal round of the college football playoff, really a drive away from going to the national championship game and getting a rematch with Ohio State on a neutral field. And maybe if they win that game, if they're in the, there's so many things that I think have led to this, but I feel like it's a combination of we're 3-3. We just lost to two teams that we consider to be bottom tier in the Big Ten. And then you have taken a lot of money from us and not really produced the results. And now it's time for a change. That's my best guess. I don't think this was strictly performance-based. That's my opinion. And maybe there were some people that were big-time donors that were like, you know what, we're not going to keep paying this. Like, if you don't make a change, because ultimately that's what is the determining factor here. If some big time boosters, donors, whatever, get in the room and say, hey, if you don't make a change, our paycheck is going to be halted. And that is a determining factor a lot.
I think you hit a lot of good points. Andy Shea and I did a show earlier this week, and we talked, okay, the fans, and then there's the money.
Yeah.
The money is a subset of the fans. And you brought up, I'm glad you did, because I was going to do the same thing, which was bring up James Franklin has not done himself many favors with the fan base.
Right.
And that, you know, angling for more money. Now, some of it he'll tell you is about more money for the staff, more facilities, which is there to help us win games. That's why I'm doing it. But you're right. You know, this threat that the USC job opens, James Franklin's name gets mentioned, all of that. The other part to it was the last contract that he signed where Penn State owes him this. Whoever was negotiating on the Penn State side, and this is not hindsight, myself and many others said the same thing. Wait a minute, you're giving him a lot of money, his buyout, if he wants to leave. So if he does well and USC or somebody else comes calling, James Franklin can get out easily. If things go to hell in a handbasket like they did, Penn State is holding the bag for $50 million, okay? So it was an unbalanced contract. All of those things. And James himself, this is the best team I've had. I've got everything in alignment. He raised that bar of expectation. And yes, he did not do himself any favors going there. But it's as I keep saying, I don't feel bad for James. I feel bad for a lot of the other people who may be caught up in this, who may end up losing their job and don't have $50 million as part of it. So the other part to all this that I find fascinating is I've already, in the first 24 hours of this story, I read articles from Wisconsin lacks the courage to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Essentially the same article written about Florida. Okay. Wish we could be like Penn State and pull that trigger, Dustin. I'm not sure what the question is, but I find it fascinating that schools, teams that are struggling a bit, are looking at Penn State as the beacon of how to handle this.
Yeah, I will tell you that the financial situation, I don't know Penn State's financial situation. I can tell you the financial situation at Wisconsin and Florida with a lot of certainty is not the same as it is at Penn State. And so there's going to be some reluctance and some holdout there to hang on as long as possible before they, I think ultimately both of those schools are going to make a change. They just maybe have to wait until that buyout drops. And I don't know, I'm not acting like I know the specifics of their contract. They could, but they have to make sure they have everything in place. This can't be, and I'm sure Penn State did the same. I'm sure Penn State made sure, like, hey, are we getting this, whatever it is, so we can buy James Franklin out? Or Wisconsin and Florida are just in a much different situation where they don't have maybe the same level of luxury of doing that because of mishandling of funds. I don't know if that's the best way to put it or not. Maybe not quite as much access to donors. Certainly not the same level of alumni as Penn State has. I think isn't Penn State the largest alumni base in the country?
Yeah.
So all that stuff makes a big difference. And this is the reason why I don't, this isn't pertaining to your question really, but a reason why I don't feel terrible for James Franklin is not just the $50 million. If he wants it, he's going to get another job. There are going to be a lot of jobs that open up, and he'll still be one of the top five candidates for a lot of those jobs, I think.
Oh yeah. There's still a lot of name value, you know, to James Franklin. And it's interesting always to see what the narrative is, Dustin, which is, oh, James Franklin could get you to 10 wins, but he can't win a national championship for you. Well, there's a heck of a lot of schools out there that said, sign me up. Yes. Get me those 10 wins, right?
Right. And because if you can get to the playoff, then hopefully that helps your recruiting, that helps your donor, that helps your attendance, your ticket sales. All that stuff matters to a lot of these programs, especially programs that are teetering. Like, look at and this is just an example, but look at the excitement that Brett Bielema has brought back to Illinois. Like, and I know that they got plastered by Indiana, and then they had a decent showing against Ohio State. But that's a fan base that really, for a long time, the last 20 years, could care less about their football team. And he just with getting them to like 8 wins and beating a few ranked teams along the way, he's gotten. So there's going to be value in somebody hiring James Franklin.
There is. And I can see that James is a very smart guy, and he's going to understand what kind of resources you need. Mm-hmm. So just like what he did to Penn State, anywhere he goes, let's use Florida as that example. And which, by the way, I think would be a pretty good fit for James. Southeast Conference, that Florida recruiting area, but would Florida have the resources to commit?
Here's my response to that. Maybe they would. Here would be my response. If he can't handle the fans at Penn State, I lived in Gainesville. They are 10 times worse in Florida. So if he is smart, he will avoid that like the plague, Jim. They are lunatics down there.
Well, you could have described pretty much every team in the Southeast Conference.
That's fan fair. Base. That is fair. Yeah.
But how about this? How about this analogy? John Calipari leaves Kentucky in basketball and goes to Arkansas.
Yeah.
Could a team like Arkansas say, hey, we're ready to – and I believe the way the contract works, I've not seen the contract itself, I'm not sure, but I believe it will be offset by the salary he would get somewhere else. So if a James Franklin might cost $50 to $60 million typically, but Arkansas could get them for 25 or 30 million, and Penn State's on the hook for the balance. James now has more money, and might Arkansas say, hey, we're saving 25, 30 million. That goes right into NIL, which right. It was my understanding when John Calipari went there, it was agreed Arkansas was going to fund NIL extensively. So I think James is smart enough to look for that in another job.
I would think so. Of the jobs that are going to be available, I would think, I don't know, Arkansas is probably going to be among the most attractive. I think you would probably put Wisconsin in that category as well, because there's a real chance Wisconsin finishes 2-10. I don't know where they're getting another win after that performance against Iowa. But the other one, and I'm sure we'll probably talk about this when we talk about candidates, is what if Nebraska and Penn State just do a little swappy? Right? So I think there's going to be some options out there. I would say the one that would, I think in terms of James Franklin, he will get run out of Gainesville in 2 years. And I think he's a good coach. I think he could win 8 or 9 games, but their fans are ridiculous. UCLA, he's going to get no support. So I would take those two jobs off the table. Like, unless UCLA or Florida is a last resort for him, I don't think there's any way he would take those jobs. But, you know, we've seen crazier things. I feel like Arkansas and Wisconsin are places where you could go to get 9-10 wins a season and you would be very much appreciated. And I don't know that that would be the case at Florida. I think you'd be appreciated at UCLA. I don't know that you're going to get any fan support or any booster support or any support from your athletic department if you do that.
Well, yeah, the financial position that UCLA is in, that's got to be part of any equation that would go on. All right, Dustin, that's going to be it for quarter number two. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about where Penn State goes from here. Going to be a lot of names rumored. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. And we were having a little conversation off the air. I'm going to bring on the air. I made mention, you know, it's fascinating that Penn State comes up with the 50-some million dollars for a buyout. Wouldn't it have been interesting if they just came up with that money as NIL money, Dustin?
Yeah, and it's a good argument in theory, but I don't, and I think we'll eventually maybe see some studies on this as to how this works. But when I hear that Texas A&M bought the best recruiting class in the history of college football, all a ton of 5-star recruits. That team went 5-7. They were not good. You can pay certain players. Look at Nico Iamalava something. I cannot pronounce his name. Who bypassed a ton of money, and Tennessee's doing okay. UCLA has won 2 games, but they're 2-4. I'm not of the belief that money automatically results in wins. Does it result in better players? Maybe. Does it result in better performance? Not always. I would love to see statistics on the highest paid rosters and then the win total and how much you're paying per win, because I got to think there's some teams in, and I think you can't have NIL that's in the tank. I don't think Wisconsin's in a very good NIL situation. I think that that's, you're seeing that, but I think there's other teams that are in very good NIL situations that are not good, that, well, don't know if they're not good, but they would not be up to the status, because we always see, like, how much does a coach make per win, basically, and you want that win, you want that number to be low, closer right. to 1 million than it is to 10 million. But I don't, we haven't seen that for like a roster salary, and it's maybe because we don't know what the salary is, but I would be interested to know that. That's one thing I hope we get at some point.
Well, I think the thing that you're right, you could spend money and fail, and Texas A&M is usually used as Exhibit A. Right now, Texas Tech put out a lot of money, and they're currently a top 10 team.
Right.
SMU might be the best example of a team that, you know, was nowhere, bought their way into the ACC, and ended up as a playoff team a year ago. I think you have to have the other pieces, the rest of the infrastructure. You can't pay five really good players and be a really good team without having, you know, the rest of the team. And, right. you know, I mentioned about putting that money into NIL, where Penn State, I don't think ever, if someone were able to get that financial information, I don't know if Penn State would be in the top 10. Yep. I think there'd be a lot of schools, you know, and schools that everyone's, why can't they beat Ohio State? Well, Ohio State has all the infrastructure. They have the infrastructure, they have the recruiting, the coaching, and they do pay the money. So when they need to go to the portal, they have all those things going for them. Now, from Penn State's standpoint, you know, like I said, I just find it fascinating as a Penn Stater that, gee, when it came time to get rid of this coach, you found $50 million laying around, you know, under the cushions of the couch. Now, the question then now becomes, where do they go from here? What happens next for Penn State, Dustin?
Yeah, I think there are, to me, there are probably a lot of names, but the two most popular are going to be Matt Rhule at Nebraska and Kurt Cignetti at Indiana. Now, here's my problem, Jim, and I can't wait to get some sort of feedback on this. If you are upset that James Franklin could not win big games, why on earth would Matt Rhule be your number one target? I don't care that he's an alum. Explain to me why he's your number one target.
He's buddy with the athletic director.
There you go. I mean, that's because I think Matt Rhule is a very good coach. I think he's very good at building programs. First of all, Penn State doesn't really need to be rebuilt as you would, as the same way like a Nebraska did or a Baylor did. He's not a quick fix, come in and win immediately type of guy. So you're asking a fan base that has been patient for a decade to continue down that patience path till he gets his players and everybody in there. I don't think he can come in and win immediately. And what's his, I think he's 2-21 against top 15 teams or whatever the number is, top 12, top 10. Sure. If that's what you want, go for it.
Well, here is, I think, the flaw in that theory, and I'm going to use the same theory, you know, with Penn State. Penn State was like lost their last whatever 20 games against top 10 opponents, something like that. I'm not sure if you were aware of this. They were an underdog in every one of those games.
Right, right.
Until Oregon. My reason for bringing that up is Matt Rhule was at Temple, Baylor, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Just being in the conversation with those top teams reflects well on the coach. I don't expect Baylor and Temple and where Nebraska has been, leading up to Matt Rhule getting there, I don't expect them to beat top 10 teams. So I'm a bit more forgiving of that record. And it's a little different if he were he to be at Penn State. And his is the predominant name that's out there. And it is the Penn State connection. It is the connection to Pat Kraft, the athletic director. So he's got a lot of those things going for him. It becomes the question, and I'll ask this about a lot of coaches when they make the changes. I look at Alabama as the better job than Washington. Mm-hmm. But if I were Kalen DeBoer, I would have never left Washington for Alabama.
I 100% agree. Okay.
You know, I look at Kurt Cignetti and the success he's having at Indiana, and that's the guy a lot of Penn State fans want. Should he? I'm not sure if I'm him, I would move to Penn State, even though it would seem like the better job.
No, I agree with you. I think if my name was Kurt Cignetti and I was the head coach at Indiana, I would not leave, because you can do whatever the rest of your, like, you can retire at Indiana based on these 2 years alone. Yes. Unless something egregious happens that's off the field, he's going to have a statue after him. He's proven that Indiana can be a monster winner in the Big Ten. Why would you leave if you've already had that establishment, if you have established that culture and you have got that support and that backing? Right. The one thing I would say, though, and this is the argument I made, because there's a lot of Indiana people that get really upset when you mention that Kurt Cignetti might think about or might take a phone call from Penn State, is that there's no chance he would leave. And I always point to Kalen DeBoer left after a perfect season at Washington, and they came one win away from winning a national championship. They were in the national championship game, and Kalen DeBoer took the job at Alabama because it was a better job. And he probably thought he could win at a higher level. Well, could win at a higher level more consistently. Maybe Kurt Cignetti thinks that. I will also say that Penn State is going to prioritize football first, second, third, and fourth among any other sport that it has. Indiana will not do that. They may now prioritize it first. They are not, but basketball still is king in Indiana.
And that would have to be taken into consideration by Kurt Cignetti. But I think the point you brought up, where he could live off these two seasons mm-hmm. for the next decade. When he comes into Penn State, I should say if he were to take the job, he's not going to have that margin anymore. He just sacrificed that margin. And Penn State fans are going to be like, hey, you turned Indiana around like that. The other part to this is, I'm not sure if I'm Penn State, I'm sold on Kurt Cignetti yet. Now, I said, in fact, before they played Oregon, I picked Oregon to win the game. Shows you what I know. But because I said I still need to see more. But what Kurt Cignetti has done in these first 2 years is he's 2 for 2 going to the portal, getting a quarterback. Mm-hmm. 2 for 2. And the other reason, I always bring up Clemson and Dabo. Remember, he won his national championships with 2 NFL quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. Okay. If you don't hit on that, and by the way, you know, James Franklin brought in a 5-star quarterback and didn't really hit on that. Okay. So your percentage of hits at quarterback, if Kurt Cignetti came to Penn State and didn't hit for the third time at quarterback, he's going to have very different results.
I agree. I think the difference is, over his career, Kurt has proven he can develop quarterbacks. James Franklin, no quarterback got drastically better, I don't think. I think Drew Aller improved from his first year to his second year, and then, or maybe it was his second to whatever it was, first year as a starter to his second year as a starter. But then this year, not good. He wasn't, even in the games that they should have won by 1,000 points, he was not good. So I do think there's a difference there. I agree with what you're saying. If you miss and then all of a sudden you get beat by Ohio State, I mean, this is a tough situation because all it takes for a program like Penn State is one loss to Ohio State, and it's hands up in the air. Here we go again. Just hired another James Franklin. So I don't – my problem is I don't know that there's any coach that they can bring in that isn't going to deal with that. Cignetti's probably the most likely to just stick it back to the fans and be – and, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But I, maybe they don't want that. I don't know.
Well, you take any of these top jobs, you take a job at Alabama, Georgia, you know, we saw with Alabama and Kalen DeBoer last year, 9-3 was not good enough.
Right.
Right. And that's what a coach will have to deal with at Penn State. It's a tough job. Now, I do think they'll be able to draw interest from a lot of big names. What I want to be careful of is not to just go and hire a big name. And I'm going to read you another quote from AD Pat Kraft. I'm confident in our future and our ability to attract elite candidates to lead our program. Does that mean we're just, you know, elite candidates? That scares me a little bit, Dustin, that his opinion might be elite candidate is the biggest name available. And I don't think that's the way to go. We'll talk more about it when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. Dustin, you know, we've been talking about now if, well, not if, Penn State is going to be looking for a new head coach. The obvious names are Matt Rhule, Kurt Cignetti. I guess my question to you is, how good a job is Penn State? There's going to be some pressure that comes with it. How good a job is it?
I'm just trying to do a quick tally in my head. I think Ohio State is a better job. I think Alabama's a better job. Boy, maybe you could put USC in that cat, but it's, to me, top seven or eight jobs in the country. There aren't a lot that you would – I don't even think Clemson is up there. I think Dabo made Clemson a really good job. So I think it is – I don't want to say top five because I'm probably forgetting some jobs in there, but I would say top seven or eight. And you're going to – I think you still have resources. I still think that has name, brand value. You still get to play every game in front of 100,000. You get the whiteout environment. You're playing in the Big Ten. You get big games against Ohio State or Michigan, USC, Oregon. You're going to get some of those teams every year. So to me, it's a very attractive job. You can, I think James Franklin proved you can recruit there. Now, maybe not to the standard that some wanted him to recruit, but I think you get the right guy in there, they'll be able to recruit at a high level. It's going to be an attractive place for transfer players. I think it's among the most among the best jobs in the country, but the best jobs in the country also come with, as you mentioned, a great deal of pressure. So that it's going to be interesting to see who wants to take that job, because I think I do believe the two candidates that you mentioned would have interest. That doesn't mean I think they'll go, but I think they would at least pick up the phone and have a legitimate conversation.
So, yes, I think it is a big enough job that it would attract, as Pat Kraft said, elite candidates. Now, when you look at it with the jobs that are available, we talked about Kurt Cignetti and, you know, Matt Rhule, but something you said off the air is these guys have phenomenal egos.
Yeah.
Okay. What we say pressure, they say opportunity. You know, they want to win a national championship. And the feeling is you could win a national championship at Penn State. And I know it'll always be James Franklin. His legacy is going to be he couldn't win the big game. He couldn't get him over the top. And I'll repeat something I say all the time when these conversations happen, Dustin. Nobody wins the big game until they do.
Right.
Ryan Day a year ago had not won the big game yet until he did. You know, Dabo had that kind of reputation before he won the national championship. It comes with the territory, and every one of these guys thinks, hey, I can be the one. So there's Kurt Cignetti, Matt Rhule. I'm making you athletic director, though, at Penn State. Where are you going to call, Dustin? What name out there? You know, it's easy. Forget like Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart's not leaving Georgia to come to Penn State. Okay.
Right.
You know, those kinds of things. Realistically, where would you go? What's the name you would look to?
Man, this is a really good question. I think that there are probably a couple candidates that you would, that I think would be interesting, whether or not they take the job, whether or not they're off limits. This is a name I'm going to throw out that I don't know that people would think. I would say Jed Fish. I think he's done, even though Washington just went 6-7 a year ago, and they got crumbled by Ohio State, but they were pretty competitive in that game at home. I think that Jed Fish is a sneakily strong candidate for that job. I want to say Dan Lanning, but he has such unlimited resources at Oregon that I find it hard to believe that he would leave. Josh Heupel at Tennessee is a candidate that interests me because of what he's been able to do offensively. Now, again, he's in a pretty good spot at Tennessee. Would he want to leave? And he's proven he can win some big games. He's also lost some games he's not supposed to lose. And I think that's kind of the trade-off with every one of these coaches. You could probably point to some big wins they've all had and some disappointing losses. But I think Jed Fish is an interesting candidate. I think Josh Heupel is a name that would intrigue me. And I'm trying to think if there's anybody else.
How about the Arizona State coach, Kenny Dillingham?
Yeah, see, I would not go off on that. I think that that's too much of a culture change. And I think your issue with Cignetti would be my issue with Kenny Dillingham, where you've done it once, but can you do that consistently? And I think sometimes that's the problem with young head coaches. We just don't have a large enough sample size. I wouldn't be willing to take a risk on that. I think another interesting name might be Marcus Freeman. But again, that's a guy who lost to Northern Illinois. He's lost to Marshall. They lost their first two games to ranked opponents this season. Is that really going to be much of an upgrade? He got Notre Dame to the national championship game last year, but is it necessarily an upgrade? I don't know. Notre Dame is such a unique job that I don't know if he would be successful outside of there. He very well might. But that's, yeah.
I like the, you know, the Marcus Freeman name, because Penn State and Notre Dame often recruit the same kid.
Sure.
And Marcus Freeman often wins those recruiting battles. I'm glad you brought up Jed Fish, because I like what he's done at Washington. And by the way, that quarterback, Damond Williams, did you see his stats from his game against Rutgers?
Yes. Was it I don't remember the exact numbers, but let me see if I can get it right. 118 rushing yards?
I have 136 rushing yards.
Oh, wow. Okay. I must have tuned out. I think it was like 439 passing.
And 402 yards passing.
Okay. I think I mixed that up a little bit then.
But he was the kid that I really liked. Little I saw of him last year when they played Penn State. What I also like is you know, I like that kind of quarterback who's the dual threat. And I always thought Drew Aller was a little bit miscast as the James Franklin quarterback, you know, what he provides for you. Another name, and it's funny, on this show, I've often talked about my man crush on Manny Diaz.
Yep, that's another good one.
And I always thought, watching his defenses, there were so many times when they would make a play and it was scheme. You looked at it and said, got to give credit to the coach for doing that. I also think the fact that he's been a head coach, I think the fact that he's coached at Penn State, one of the things I think that happens when a head coach leaves, Penn State was shaping up to have a really good class of 27 recruiting class. Well, every one of them has now decommitted, which is to be expected. Okay.
Right.
But you know, when you're there's still several of these players who were in that locker room when Manny Diaz was around. My understanding is he was well liked and well respected. You know, so that's a name that I throw out there. I'm also wondering if the Penn State fans are prepared for just how ugly this could get, not just with losing recruits, but mm-hmm. also losing players to the portal.
Right.
And because of that, you know, you've got to take two steps backwards before you can take the steps forward with whoever you bring in.
Right. And yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of what the heck is going on in terms of the offseason, because there are going to be, just brace yourself for it, there are going to be a lot of people that enter the transfer portal. Doesn't mean they're going to leave, but they're definitely going to enter the transfer portal, explore their options, and you know, before they make their ultimate decision, do I stay for Penn State? Do I play for this new coach, or is it going to be better for me to go somewhere else? Yeah, it's this is going to be, I mean, obviously this is the first time in 12 years Penn State's been part of a coaching search. So there, and it's a lot's changed in the last 12 years, Jim. So it's going to be a lot different than what we saw all those years ago. I think the one, if you want to look at a positive, I'm sure a lot of people are looking at this as a positive.
Yes, they are.
One of the things is, so I'm going to actually speak out of both sides of my mouth here. One is, nobody should ever expect, unless you hire Kurt Cignetti, nobody should ever expect what Kurt Cignetti has done at Indiana to happen anywhere else. That's like four coaches could probably have that sort of turnaround instantly. So I wouldn't expect that. But the nice thing is that James Franklin's first couple of years had to be patient, because they had zero, like, I could have played offensive line. I'd have gotten steamrolled every play, but that was what's happening anyway. You don't have to wait those 3 to 4 years to get your players in and get, address some issues of need. You can bring in a bunch of players, or you can fill holes, or whatever you need to do. You can basically bring your entire, if they were to hire Cignetti, they could basically bring that entire team from Indiana to Penn State. Right. So, And right now, who wouldn't trade for that? So, I think there are some positives where you don't look at this and say, okay, we have to have a massive rebuild. I don't think that's going to be the case, but there probably are going to be at least some level of growing pains. But what do I know? I would have never guessed some of these things happening in college football.
I think even if things had gone well this year, I think there's the understanding from Penn State fans that come next year, you're losing. Where a year ago you lost Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter, this coming year, it's the quarterback, it's the running back, it's the offensive line, it's the defensive line. You lose the whole you would have been kind of a rebuild or reload kind of deal already for next year, no matter what, in a best-case scenario. And any coach coming in, it'll be fascinating to see their strategy. I want a coach who will come in and could win for the long run, right, not just say, hey, I could bring in all these portal guys. With that said, Matt Rhule, could he bring Dylan Raiola with them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't. Yeah, for sure, that would happen.
You know, he would certainly try, I think. So it is fascinating when a new coach will come in, it's going to be fun to watch, Dustin, what that rebuild looks like and how much of the Penn State infrastructure that's there. By infrastructure, I also mean they have some really good position coaches. Will they try to keep those or not? A lot of things. It's going to be a fun time in Nittany Nation, Dustin. All right. Thank you for coming in and a whole show worth talking Penn State. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.